Hello and welcome to the Indiana Lawyer Podcast, your source for news in Hoosier Law, brought to you by Taft. I'm Maura Johnson, Indiana Lawyer Reporter, and your host this week. As always, I'm here in our Monument Circle studio with Managing Editor Daniel Carson to give you the rundown on the latest legal news. Plus, this podcast features an interview by reporter Alexa Schrake with Evansville Bar Association President Gray Freiberger. Freiberger is a partner at Barber & Bauer LLP. He and Alexa talked about the Bar Association and the challenges it's currently facing. So let's get started. Today is Wednesday, July 24th, 2024, and these are your headlines. Daniel, you have news from the Indiana Attorney General's office about a lawsuit filed against Monroe County. What can you tell us about it?
Just days after filing a lawsuit against the city of East Chicago, Indiana's Office of the Attorney General is now suing Monroe County over its local immigration policy. Quote, after filing a lawsuit against East Chicago earlier, I am now taking similar action in Monroe County over an immigration and citizenship status policy, which we find also violates state law, Attorney General Todd Rakita said in a news release. After multiple conversations with the sheriff's office to rescind its illegal policy, it didn't work, and now my office is taking the next step to enforce state laws passed by the General Assembly, end quote. The lawsuit, filed in Monroe Circuit Court, is requesting the trial court to compel Monroe County to stop allegedly violating the state's ban on sanctuary cities. Quote, illegal immigration is unfair to those who came here the right way and to the hardworking Hoosiers who are bearing increased costs for health care, education, and other services used by illegal aliens who shouldn't be here, Rakita said. My office acted in East Chicago and Monroe County, but we are not stopping there. We will continue evaluating other local units of government and ensuring the law is followed. The lawsuit filed against the city of East Chicago alleged the city was not complying with federal immigration laws. It stated the city is violating Indiana Code Chapter 5218.2. Rakita warned several Indiana cities of litigation if they didn't rescind their local policies on sanctuary cities back in May.
Thanks, Daniel. Destiny Wells will battle Republican incumbent Todd Rakita for the top legal officer position in the state after receiving the delegate nomination at the state Democratic Party's convention on July 13th. Wells received 1,057 votes from delegates compared to Beth White's 475 votes. Fellow party members praised the nomination, calling it an opportunity to win an office that has critical influence over Hoosier lives. In her speech, Wells noted Rakita bringing boxing gloves to his speech at the GOP state convention in June. The gloves said fighting and winning on them as part of his campaign. In a news release as the party chair announced the voting results, Wells said, quote, Todd Rakita is the most vulnerable attorney general in the nation this year. It's going to take relentless fortitude to bring home a win for integrity in the Indiana Attorney General's office, and I'm ready to fight like hell for Hoosiers and run right through that finish line in November, end quote. On July 11th, the Indiana Citizen reported a third investigation into Rakita's legal license by the Indiana Disciplinary Commission. The grievance was filed against him after statements he made during a press conference on terminated pregnancy reports filed with the Indiana Department of Health. Last year, Rakita was publicly reprimanded by the Indiana Supreme Court for comments he made about Indianapolis doctor Caitlin Bernard after she spoke publicly about overseeing a medication abortion for a 10-year-old rape victim from Ohio. In a statement on the Fox News program, Jesse Waters Primetime, Rakita said Bernard is an abortion activist acting as a doctor. Now, going back to Daniel, an Indianapolis accountant is facing prison time for defrauding the Internal Revenue Service. What can you tell us about it?
An Indianapolis CPA faces up to 3 years in prison after he pleaded guilty to assisting in the preparation of false tax returns on behalf of clients who participated in an illegal tax shelter. Jason Krashy entered the guilty plea in the U.S. District Court for the Southern District of Mississippi, according to the U.S. Department of Justice. According to court documents and statements made in court, between 2013 and 2022, Krashy prepared income tax returns for clients that claimed millions of dollars in false deductions for so-called royalty payments. These royalty payments were merely circular flows of money designed to give the appearance of genuine business expenses. In total, Krashy's preparation of false tax returns claiming fraudulent royalty deductions caused a loss to the IRS of at least $2.5 million, according to a DOJ news release. Krejci is scheduled to be sentenced on January 14, 2025. He faces a maximum penalty of 3 years in prison and also faces a period of supervised release, restitution, and monetary penalties.
Thanks, Daniel. Two lawsuits filed July 9th against Simon Property Group and its security services for the Greenwood Park Mall allege the 2022 mass shooting could have been prevented. The lawsuits were filed in Marion Superior Court on behalf of Rosa Gomez, who survived the shooting, and the families of Victor Gomez, Pedro Pineda, and Rosa Pineda, all of whom were killed in the mall's food court on July 17, 2022. The complaints cite wrongful death, gross negligence, and neglect by both Simon and Allied Universal Security Services for not taking reasonable steps to prevent the shooting from happening. According to complaints, no security personnel were in or near the food court when the shooting occurred, nor did they respond to give aid in the minutes after the shooter was killed by a legally armed bystander. The shooter spent more than an hour in the restroom preparing to carry out the mass shooting, all the while going unchecked by security. His backpack contained an ammunition vest, several rifles, a handgun, and multiple magazines. If the dozens of video feeds throughout the parking lot and mall were adequately staffed and worked properly, and if the mall had been properly monitored, the shooting would have been preventable, the complaint alleges. The lawsuit requests damages and a jury trial. Now, Daniel has news of a Jeffersonville man sentenced to prison for his role in the January 6, 2021 U.S. Capitol riot.
A Jeffersonville man faces more than 5 years in prison after he was sentenced in federal court for his actions during the January 6, 2021 breach of the U.S. Capitol. Curtis Tate, 32, was sentenced to 63 months in prison, 36 months of supervised release, in order to pay restitution in the amount of $3,176 by U.S. District Judge Christopher Cooper. Tate pleaded guilty March 7th to a felony count of assaulting, resisting, or impeding certain officers. According to court documents, Tate attended the Stop the Steal rally in Washington, D.C. on January 6, 2021, in protest of Congress' certification of the Electoral College vote. Court documents stated that later in the afternoon, Tate repeatedly struck a United States Capitol Police officer in the helmet with the metal baton. In response, another USCP officer sprayed Tate with pepper spray, causing him to retreat. Tate struck at least two officers with the baton, hitting one in the hand and the other repeatedly on the helmet. He also threw a broken table leg, a floor lamp, a speaker box, and a shoe at officers guarding a tunnel entrance on the Capitol's Lower West Terrace. He struck a third officer's arm and damaged a window when he threw the speaker box. Tate pleaded guilty to three felony counts of assaulting, resisting, or impeding police using a deadly or dangerous weapon, court records show. The FBI arrested Tate on August 24, 2023 in Wilmington, North Carolina. Now, back to Mara with news about Indiana Supreme Court Chief Justice Loretta Rush seeking reappointment.
Indiana Chief Justice Loretta Rush sent a letter to the Office of Judicial Administration and judges across the state stating her intent for a third term as Chief Justice. Rush has been on the High Court's bench for 12 years and is currently in her 10th year as Chief Justice. In her letter, Rush thanked colleagues for their passion and dedication in helping launch a variety of projects, including the statewide electronic filing and unified case management systems and pretrial and problem-solving court initiatives. The Judicial Nominating Commission will have the final say on whether Rush will stay in her position or if one of the other four justices on the bench will be appointed to the role. The commission will meet to vote on August 21st in the Supreme Court Conference Room in the Indiana State House. All current Supreme Court justices have been invited to share their thoughts during the meeting. Justices are asked to speak about the qualities and attributes important in a Chief Justice. Rush ended her letter saying that whatever comes next, she looks forward to continuing to work with judges across the state and the Office of Judicial Administration. Now back to Daniel for news about a former state legislator sentenced to prison in a casino fraud case.
Sean Eberhardt, a former state representative from Shelbyville, was sentenced to 1 year and 1 day in federal prison after admitting to advocating for legislation in exchange for a lucrative position at a casino. Eberhardt pleaded guilty in November to a felony charge of conspiracy to commit honest services fraud. The U.S. Attorney's Office said Eberhardt was also given a $25,000 fine and will serve 1 year of probation after his release from prison. He also agreed to pay $60,000 in restitution. Eberhardt faced up to 5 years in prison and a $250,000 fine, but the U.S. attorney recommended a sentence no higher than the low end of advisory guidelines. Eberhardt used his position as a lawmaker to enrich himself by soliciting and accepting gifts, payments, and other things of value from Spectacle Entertainment in exchange for favorable official action, namely future employment at and compensation from Spectacle, according to federal prosecutors. Eberhardt is the third former state lawmaker to find themselves in court over their dealings with Spectacle or its predecessor, Centaur. And finally, to wrap up this week's headlines, Mara, tell us what you're working on for our next print edition.
For our July 31st issue, I'll have a story about how immigration is impacting the labor market in Indiana. As of August 2023, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce reported the state's labor market is not yet fully recovered, but is displaying signs of improvement. You can read all about it in our next issue. And that'll do it for this week's headlines. As always, if you want more legal news, check us out at theindianalawyer.com. Stick around after our sponsor break to hear Alexa's interview with Greg Freiberger.
Taft, today's modern law firm. At Taft, we cultivate a highly respectful, transparent workplace that fosters creativity, teamwork, inclusion, and diversity. We couple our culture with a client-first approach, rewarding lawyers who understand their clients' goals and work to deliver success. Taft, the modern law firm. To learn more, visit taftlaw.com.
I have with me today Greg Freiberger, Evansville Bar Association president. Greg is a partner at Barber & Bauer LLP in Evansville, where he focuses on personal injury, trust and estate litigation, and corporate litigation. He's worked there for 2.5 years now. So Greg, to start, tell us how long you've been with the Evansville Bar Association.
I've been with the Bar Association since I started practice in 2001 when I was with my first firm. It was kind of an unspoken rule that you become part of the bar to help educate young lawyers and get you networked and kind of included into the everyday happenings in the court system here in Evansville. So since 2001, so about 23 years.
And did you ever expect that you might become president of the association?
I can't say that I ever expected it, but the Evansville Bar Association is really good about, or the Evansville Bar, I should say, the members of the bar, really good about taking their turn with responsibility. And so I kind of suspected that at some point I would reach the presidency just because I like to be involved. And it's somewhat of our civic duty, I think, as attorneys to take your turn at the helm. To try to keep the boat floating in the right direction.
Do you have like a favorite saying about being president of the association?
Not really. It's nice to just kind of reconnect with a lot of the members of the Bar Association. Early on, we had whenever I was a younger attorney, we had a pretty strong young lawyer group, and so I got to know a lot of lawyers my same age and same experience level at that time. But then from that point until, you know, recently, until a couple of years ago, you focus really hard on your career and on the cases you're working. And you start to you drift away a little bit from some of the younger members of the association. And so being the president or just being a member of the board of directors of the Bar Association helps to kind of reintroduce myself to some members that I hadn't met or that are younger, which is, I think, a major benefit. It helps kind of connect the generations a little bit.
So what have been some of your goals as president?
So one of the major goals I have is somewhat of a continuation from my predecessors. Since 2020, when COVID happened, we've lost a little bit of the in-person contact. And I thought, you know, that was one of the major benefits as a young lawyer, being part of the Bar Association is, like I said, you got to meet people, you got to sit with older attorneys and listen to the war stories and the judges as well. We have judges that are members of the Bar Association as well. So just by being around people with that kind of experience and knowledge really helps to educate a younger lawyer. And then you have the incidental benefits of learning how to act in a closely knit bar like Evansville's is. And so that's something that I'm somewhat excited about, because the presidents before me have tried really hard to try to bring back that face to face and personal contact between the members. And that's something we continue to build on, because I think that is one of the strengths of at least our local bar association.
Have you foreseen any challenges for the association this past year? And, you know, if so, like, how have you guys dealt with those?
One of the challenges that I think most bar associations are having, bar associations obtain a lot of their funding through CLE, through offering continuing legal education. And I know, again, I'll blame COVID, but being separated away from the in-person contact, it was necessary for us to be able to obtain that CLE either online or you know, through other means. And that's been a struggle, because now I think it's becoming more and more prevalent that CLE is offered by video, by replay, and some of it's free, some of it's, you know, you can pretty much find a good CLE anywhere. But in my opinion, at least, there's really no replacement for having the in-person CLE with members of your own bar, where you can learn, you know, nuances from of the local courts and judges. And so that's one of the major, I think, issues we've faced and are trying to remedy. And then again, the getting back to the social networking and knowing what my neighbor does down the street, what their specialty is, so that if I have a family member or friend that needs that, I don't have to try to reinvent the wheel. I can send them to somebody who I know can take care of them really well. The other, I think, issue that we're going to face is with this being an election year and a kind of an odd election year, at least historically, I think lawyers are going to get some real questions, you know, about election law, about, you know, what something means and why a judge would have decided one way or the other. And I think that's going to be an important aspect this year for lawyers alone to maintain that respect for the judiciary and to try to uphold that publicly, because I think there's going to be, you know, there's obviously political underpinnings and political issues that are out there, but the judiciary isn't necessarily supposed to be a part of that. And so I think, despite the allegations, I think it's up to lawyers, you know, on a day-to-day basis to uphold that respect for the judiciary in the public. And I think that's something we'll face here in the next few months, probably.
You know, you said you've been, part of the association for, you know, 20 some years. You know, what are some of the significant changes that you've seen since you've been a member?
The biggest change that I've seen is the falling away of the networking, of knowing your neighbors, knowing the people that you practice against. I think it's really underestimated how important that is. For instance, in Evansville, for our bar, there's plenty of good litigators here in town, and I've litigated against most of them. And we can fight pretty hard for our clients, and we can do it within the bounds of ethics and professional courtesy, without, at the same time, without compromising, you know, our advocacy for our client. And then after that's over with, because we do it above board, I can shake that person's hand, my opponent's hand, and like them just as much as I did before. I think that's easier to do when you know that person, when you know the quality of that person, and you can't do that without spending some time with the person. There's the best way to communicate is face to face, in my opinion, at least. And that's something that's kind of fallen by the wayside, because we have now, you know, the tools to be able to do a lot of work, you know, remotely by phone or by video. Video is good, but it does lose a little bit in the translation, and you really don't get to know somebody until you're, you know, sitting in a deliberation with them, or you're, you know, waiting for clients to make a decision, and you're just talking about their kids and your kids and what they like to do with their time and things like that, and those are things you don't get on a conference call, and so I think that is something that has drastically changed in the practice of law over the past 20 years, in my opinion.
What is something that, you know, you've looked forward to the most in your role as president?
We used to do an event here a long time ago where the Bar Association, the attorneys in the association, went caroling around the holidays. and not necessarily Christmas caroling, but caroling nonetheless. And we're going to try to bring that back this year. And I'm looking forward to that. I think it's going to be a good event, not just to get with my fellow bar members, but and spend some time with them, but also to show the public that, you know, attorneys are, you know, we're people too, and we like the holidays, and you know, it's a non-denominational thing. But we're celebrating the spirit, and I think that'll be something I'm looking forward to this year.
You know, whenever you're not practicing, you know, what are some of your hobbies? Do you usually sing?
Oh God, no. At least not where people can hear me. No, I do a variety of things. Like most attorneys, exercise is important, just because, you know, with the stresses of work, it's important to have that outlet. So I do a little bit of that, some camping, some hiking, running. I have three kids, so hobbies are the major part of my hobbies are hanging out with them. I coach my kids, my son's lacrosse team. I'm one of the coaches of the lacrosse team, so we have a great time with that. But that's pretty much it. I don't read normally, because I read so much during the day that I just don't feel like reading when I get home at night. So usually it's more physical things, active things, hands-on things.
My last question is just, you know, what inspires you? It could be somebody, you know, that's like part of the association, or just, you know, whatever keeps you going.
Well, my faith and my family. You know, the practice of law is tough. My partners are inspiring to me. If you don't like who you're working with or who you're living with, you know, the practice of law can grind you up pretty quick. And so I'm inspired by them. It's not really necessary to keep going, but to keep me enthusiastic, you know, to keep me fresh. That's always a tough thing as a lawyer, to try to remain enthusiastic. Especially after you've been beaten or once or twice or something like that, that knocks you down a peg, but that's healthy. So I'd say my faith and my family are my inspiration.
Okay, that'll do for this week's interview. Greg, thank you again for joining me today. And to our listeners, head over to theindianalawyer.com to hear our past interviews. You can also find us on your favorite podcast apps. We'll talk to you soon.